Thanks for joining us at Cults to Consciousness. This storytelling podcast is meant to be for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for any medical advice. We may discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. Lastly, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host.
The Get Right Room is a room that's basically the size of a walk-in closet. And if you get put in the Get Right Room, you have to sit in there all day and night, and they put on preaching tapes from beginning to end the entire time you're there. There was a girl that was in the Get Right Room the day that I got to that boarding school, the day that I left as well. So every single day for 367 days, that girl spent every single day in the Get Right Room. She never left.
Wait, she was there for an entire year?
Because she didn't write her lines, and they kept stacking up and stacking up and stacking up because she refused to write her lines. They don't want anyone knowing what's going on there. So yeah, the year before I was there, that's when they had their, I think it was their second death that occurred there. Literally everything we did on the property. They didn't want anybody from the outside coming in and having any idea of how things were run, or on the off chance that a girl does get to escape, which happened twice. I was brainwashed within like 2 weeks. I literally was beginning to believe this was the best place for me to be. I didn't want to die and go to hell. And I also knew that I was a bad girl. And that's why my mom sent me to this place. It was actually my therapist who told me that I was a part of a cult. I didn't even realize that it was a cult. And she was like, you know, Ashley, the place you got sent to is a cult.
Hey, my name is Shalice Ansola, and this is Cults to Consciousness, where we discuss leaving high-demand religions or organizations and finding healing and independence through awareness and true individual sovereignty. If you're only listening and you would like to see our faces, you can go to our YouTube channel at Cults to Consciousness. You can leave those words of encouragement for our guests. It really means a lot to them. They do read the comments. You can like, subscribe, become an advocate. It means so much to us seeing the channel grow, knowing that we are helping people out there and really just shedding light on all of these abusive cults out there and just trying to help people get out of them and out of the mentality. So today's guest, she's a longtime friend of mine, and she's actually a very pivotal person in my story. I met her at a scuba class, and she introduced me to some people who just completely sent me off in a different trajectory, which landed me in Peru, which landed me to starting a podcast. So, I mean, technically without her, this podcast wouldn't exist. So I'm really excited to talk to her and hear more of her story, because she grew up in, well, she didn't grow up in, she was kind of forced into an IFB boarding school, Independent Fundamentalist Baptist boarding school. And we are kind of exposing all of those different schools. You may have seen the documentary Let Us Pray that goes into some of the treatment that went on in those schools. And so we're going to talk about her time there, how it shaped who she was, and how she's even still deconstructing some of those belief systems, or when they pop up, she has to deal with those. So thank you so much for joining us, Ashley Kellum.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is so exciting. So much fun. So you're in Florida now. She used to be in LA, but now she's coming to us from Florida on her own soul-searching mission and doing great out there. So now we're going to go back to your childhood. So thank you for coming on and being willing to share, first of all.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about your early childhood and kind of the origin story of how your mother got involved in the church, which eventually led you to this school.
Sure. So early childhood, my mom was a really young mom. So she was 19 when she had my brother, 21 when she had me. She was a single mom, and she was struggling to make ends meet. She also came from a family where she was one of 13. So they were hardcore Catholic. So there was that element of Catholicism that was super ingrained in her head and in her life. Growing up, we weren't super religious, but around, I think I was 8 or 9 years old, my mom got saved. And that's when life kind of took a little bit of a turn where there was a lot more rules. That's kind of like when all of the belief patterns started, where I was getting a lot of those beliefs thrown at me that I was bad for doing A, B, C, or D. Growing up and moving into middle school, high school, I was a little bit of a rebellious teenager. I wouldn't say that I was doing anything majorly wrong, but I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder when it came to my relationship with my mom. Because my mom was such a young mom, she wasn't around a lot, and she was a single mom. So she was working three jobs often. So there's a lot of babysitters watching us or staying home alone from a really young age. You basically had a kid raising kids, and she was doing it all by herself. So, you know, she really struggled a lot. And me and my brother really struggled a lot with not having two parents taking care of us and a parent that had no support. So I think there was this subconscious kind of, you're the person that's supposed to be providing me safety and security, love, affection, but I'm not really getting a lot of that from you. And so it's like this subconscious, I want to connect with you, but I don't even know how to like use those words. And I was so angry with her all the time. And I had no idea that that's subconsciously what it was. So me and her had a very tumultuous relationship where I just had this chip on my shoulder towards her, and it caused a lot of issues with her and I, and we triggered each other in so many ways. So when I was in high school and I had started being sexually active, drinking, smoking weed, doing things like that, not knowing how to process any of my emotions whatsoever. So really leaning heavily on anything that kind of helps to disassociate from all of those, all of those feelings, regulating my nervous system, not knowing how. So, you know, smoking weed, drinking alcohol, things like that. My mom, when she started finding out about that, the things that I was doing, she got really nervous and scared that I was going to go down a path that she went down when she was younger. And since she was super new into this hardcore religion, basically, like, she was afraid that if I didn't straighten up my life, I was gonna go to hell. So she tried to put on some really strong reins, and that, of course, made me rebel even more. And then it was the summer of ninth grade. There was a girl in our church that got sent away to this reform school. And basically, she had come back completely changed, very respectful to her parents, the joy of the Lord in her heart, and just like a really good girl. It was right when she was fresh off the boat, basically, so to speak, is when my mom had come across her. And so my mom basically told me, hey, if you don't straighten up and start obeying and start getting your life together, basically, getting saved and being a good Christian and, you know, not having sex or doing all of the things, if you don't start making a shift, I'm going to send you off to this school. Mm-hmm. I think after that, she had found out that I had sex with the person I lost my virginity to. And she said, that's it. You've got three strikes, and strike three, we're getting on a plane and you're going to that school. Basically, the strikes were very, very light. Like, I was grounded and I went on the internet when I wasn't supposed to. That was strike one. Strike two, I went to the mall when I wasn't supposed to. And then strike three, she came home on her lunch break from work and found the guy that I lost my virginity to naked and in my closet. And the next day we were on a plane to this boarding school.
Oh my gosh. I can only imagine her shock and complete horror, because within the IFB, the rules are so incredibly strict. I mean, they don't even encourage dating or kissing until you're married. And here you have a naked man in your closet. So how many of those IFB rules, or can you remember the rules that really, really changed for you when she joined this church? Because it seems like they are so intensely strict about certain things. Like, for example, we've had people who said they weren't allowed to wear pants and they could only wear skirts or dresses. The modesty rules are really intense. Was there anything like that that she tried to impose on you?
The church that my mom was a part of wasn't nearly as strict as the school that I got sent to. But some of the things that I was already starting to learn was having any type of relationship with a man outside of marriage was super looked down upon. So I wasn't even allowed to like talk to boys on the phone or do anything with a boy that wasn't completely in a friend setting or chaperoned or anything like that. She would tell me all of these stories about like every single boy you kiss when you get married one day is going to be standing behind you at the altar, and you're going to have to live with that long list of men, and the person you marry is going to have to marry all those people as well. Like, it was just like a really intense feeling of already being shamed to have a normal human interaction with the opposite sex.
Yeah, that's definitely slut shaming at its finest. And something that makes me so grossed out about purity culture, which is why we've done entire episodes on it. It's just so damaging, because then you also don't learn safe boundaries. You don't learn safe sex. You don't learn any of that. It's just all or nothing. And then if you do have sex, you're seen as a scum of the earth and used, and nobody's going to want you anymore. And that also leaves so much room for people who've been assaulted and they feel like that was taken from them and it wasn't even their choice, but now they're scum of the earth too. So there's just so many problems with that. But anyway, let's continue on. So the next day you were put on a plane to this school. What's going through your mind?
Honestly, I had no idea the type of boarding school that it was. So in my mind, I didn't even know how religious it was. I didn't know what any of the rules were. To be fair, my mom didn't even know to the extent of what it was like there. So I thought I was going to a boarding school that you'd see in the movies where it's just a whole bunch of girls and we get to like chit chat and make friends and you're just away for a year. And so I was like, not looking forward to it, but I was also like, cool, I get to go live at a boarding school for a year. This is going to be really interesting. And I was semi kind of looking forward to it. I had no idea. And then on the plane ride there, you know, my mom's crying and crying and crying. And I'm like playing a word search and I'm just like pissed off, you know, just like, whatever. Like, I don't know why you're crying. You're the one that's taking me here, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we were on the way to the boarding school. I was semi excited. But as soon as we pulled up to it, everything changed. I knew it wasn't like that. It was like, skirt, skirt, flip the script. This isn't what I thought it was going to be.
So describe it then. What are you seeing? What are you noticing that is not what you thought it would be?
Well, we drive up to the property, and the property is in the middle of a city called Jay, Florida. So basically, it's a one stoplight city. It's surrounded by nothing but peanut fields, corn fields, and the entire community is gated. And as soon as you walk up to it, you have some staff members that come outside and they meet you at the door and they go to bring in me and my mom, and I have to turn around because they have to punch in a code. There's magnetic alarms on all of the windows and all of the doors. It's a pretty locked down facility. As soon as we go inside, they said, okay, say goodbye to your mom. And my mom was just like, wait, that's it? Just say goodbye? He's like, this is where you say goodbye. And so I basically gave my mom a hug goodbye. They took me into a bathroom. They strip searched me. They made me take all my jewelry off, give them any piece of me that I brought in with me, they wanted to take with them. And then they made me take a cold shower and to wash off all of my sins. So basically a quick little baptism. After that, they put me in a bright yellow shirt and some stockings and a long skirt. And I had to go listen to a last minute chapel. And then they took me into a dormitory. Right from then and there, you are on buddy. That's what new people are. They get put on buddy. You have to wear a bright yellow shirt for the entire time you're on buddy. And you can't speak to anybody except for the person who is your buddier. How that's laid out is the longer you've been there and the more you've been able to prove that you're a good girl and that you're willing to follow the rules, then the more privileges you get, which means you're in charge of new people. And so when you're on buddy, you can only speak to the person that's watching, only if there's certain staff members around that can listen to your conversation. And you can never go further than 6 feet from that person. So like anytime you have to take a shower, go to the bathroom, like you have always got to be within 6 feet of that person who's babysitting you, basically.
Jeez.
So they had me put on the yellow shirt, put on the clothes, and we go into the chapel. And there's this person that I've never met, who is just a girl that got sent there just like me, who is now my watcher. At this point, I'm just kind of like taking it all in. I don't have freedom of speech. I'm not allowed to have this beautiful ring that I got from a family member. Can't have that. I can't have any personal items that are special to me that give me comfort or anything like that. There's a lot of rules for new people. Like you can't have more than 3 personal items on your bed. All of the clothing was really strange. You know, you have to cover up your legs completely. You're not allowed to wear black underwear. You can't paint your nails. The list goes on and on. But like at first, my initial feeling was like, where the hell am I right now? What's about to go down?
Yeah, it feels like you've just been entered into a prison system.
Yeah, and it's honestly wild. Like, not to have a pissing contest with prisons or inmates, but you can't even have a conversation. You can't see or speak to your family the first 3 months you're there. You're not allowed to talk about anything having to do with your life before getting sent there. You're not really allowed to talk about anything that doesn't have to do with the Bible or God. You can't have any relationships outside of that place. So you're not allowed to have any contact with any of your friends back home. You're not allowed to talk about your friends back home. You're not allowed to talk about famous people or the president or music. You know, you can't even listen to music, have any contact with the outside world whatsoever. You can't even go outside unless you've been there for a certain amount of time and you get PE or yard work duty. So you're really cut off completely from society and the outside world. So yeah, you kind of like, you're just like living under a rock for a year or however long you get sent there for.
Oh my gosh. So you enter into this. Everything is a shock. You're trying to acclimate. You're also a rebellious teenager, which rebellious, you're just kind of doing normal teenager things. And you're stuck in this place. So how is your mentality? Is it, okay, I'll just pretend until I get out of here? Or you're like, oh, I have to actually follow the rules and be good? Or what's your game plan once you enter into this place?
It is so funny. I actually have this thought all the time. Like, if I got sent back there today, I would do it so differently. I went straight into like, I just need to follow the rules and keep my head down, because literally the moment I got there, I'm sitting there in the chapel and behind me, there was this girl who was crying and sobbing, and she wouldn't stop crying or sobbing. And they called six other girls to go floor her. With flooring is when they'd have like six or seven girls, whether it's staff members or other girls that are helpers, which have like gone up the scale with how good you are in your seniority. And you'd go and sit on top of the girl until she stops crying. So you've got six or seven people sitting on top with all of their weight on them. Their arms and limbs go super numb. They start turning purple until the girl stops crying or stops trying to get away or stops hyperventilating or showing any large emotion. Until they stop doing that, then that's how long the girls will sit on them floor and floor them floor. So I looked behind me and immediately they were like, turn around, don't look. You're not allowed to look, because the girl that got floored was on Buddy, and buddies aren't supposed to acknowledge that other buddies exist. If you see someone in a yellow shirt, you have to turn around, not look at them. But it's my first night. So I turned around to look, and then all these girls started sitting on top of her. And I was like, what the fuck? What is going on? And so basically she was like, if you don't contain yourself, if you don't do what you're told for one, but also if you don't contain yourself, if you want to show big reactions with your crying or hyperventilating, that's going to happen to you. So make sure you contain that. And so immediately you're taught any type of feeling that is a normal human emotion, don't feel it. You're wrong for feeling it. In fact, you probably just are sinning and you need to get right with God, or else you wouldn't be feeling that way. When really you've got kids from the age of 10 to 15 who miss their parents, who are scared, who are in a place where they have no access to any of the support that, if they ever had any to begin with. So you're getting cut off from all of that. It's a normal reaction to be scared and to cry. Like, I felt like I got dropped off at a daycare and my mom forgot to pick me up. It's the strangest feeling in the world to be a pivotal part of your growth and how you perceive the world and yourself, and to be sent to a place like that and to learn that every feeling that you have, that if it isn't a happy one, it's because there's something bad and wrong with you. So that was a really interesting perspective to go into that. I kept my head down and realized really quickly, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to get floored. So I'm going to do what they say. And I would say it took me, like, I was brainwashed within like 2 weeks. I literally was beginning to believe this was the best place for me to be, because I didn't want to die and go to hell. And I also knew that I was a bad girl. And that's why my mom sent me to this place. I was acting up and I was doing bad things. And this was my chance to make things right with my mom and make things right with my life. And thank God my mom sent me to this place, because if she didn't, I wouldn't have realized how bad I was and needing to change. So it was very quickly after being sent there that I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. Oh gosh, this is right. This is good for me. Wow. And seeing the different things that were happening all around me, for instance, it would start with the simplest, littlest one, which was writing demerits, which basically you had to write lines, sentences, if you did anything, if you broke any rules or did anything wrong. So I would be vacuuming and the cord would come out of the wall and I would have to write 5,000 times, I'll be more careful next time I vacuum. Something super simple like that. If you don't write your lines and they build up, then if you get a certain amount of lines, they'll put you in something called the Get Right Room. The Get Right Room is a room that's basically the size of a walk-in closet. And if you get put in the Get Right Room, you have to sit in there all day and night. You can only leave to go to the bathroom, and they put on preaching tapes from beginning to end the entire time you're there. So you're listening to preaching tapes and writing lines the entire day. The only time you leave, like I said, is to use the restroom. And so there was a girl that was in the Get Right room the day that I got to that boarding school, the day that I left as well. So every single day for 367 days, that girl spent every single day in the Get Right room. She never left.
Wait, she was there for an entire year?
Because she didn't write her lines and they kept stacking up and stacking up and stacking up because she refused to write her lines. She was in that room for the entire duration of the time that I was there. I don't know how long she was in that school, but my entire time being in that school, she was there in that room.
What? That is, you would go insane.
A lot of people did go insane. And one of the saddest things about it is it was so psychologically abusive that when girls would have reactions to this type of psychological abuse and emotional and mental abuse, instead of giving them the proper tools on how to regulate their nervous system and work through big emotional reactions, it was like, you're bad, you're wrong, your feelings are bad and wrong, and you're just a sinner that needs to get right with God. And that's why you're having so many issues right now.
Wow.
It's because you're not right with God.
That is terrifying. I can't imagine, I mean, being in there for an entire day, I would want to go crazy. But for an entire year, that is awful. That is so extreme and clearly child abuse and just all of this, all of these things that I'm hearing about these schools. And the worst part is it's for God. It's supposed to make you more holy or more worthy. It's really, really gross. And I'm so sorry that you had to deal with all of this.
Thank you. It is really, truly disgusting. I had a really, really difficult time even coming to terms with the fact that this experience and the things that went down there is a real, real form of abuse. Even though there was no physical abuse that happened to me because I kept my head down, I also experienced so much guilt from just like not saying anything. Or if I did get to a certain ranking, I'm already a part of this system. And I feel so much guilt and shame for having to have been somebody that had to inflict punishment, not physically, but to certain girls, and would look the other way when punishment was happening to other girls. And that was a lot to carry for a young teenager. I'm a part of what took place there. And that felt really icky for a long time. And I also just didn't feel like I had the right to even talk about it because there are so many other programs and cults and institutions out there where so many other kids have it way, way worse on such a deeper level. So for so many years, I held on to a lot of things that I experienced where I didn't even let it come to my forefront. And it was just like a subconscious reprogramming constant in the background. But there was a lot of, I feel like I don't have a right to be angry. I don't have a right to feel like I was traumatized. I don't have a right to acknowledge the deep trauma that I experienced because it didn't look like A, B, C, or D. And I'm finally at the place in my life where it's like, that's so not true. It was very traumatic. A lot of things that went down there was not okay. And now processing it all as an adult to look back, it's like, wow, there's layers to it. There are absolutely layers to it. But some of the stuff that went down in that school, there was this girl that got sent there that was a vegan. So her entire household was a vegan. She had been vegan since she was born. Well, there's meat at every single meal. And part of the rules is you have to eat your entire meal within 30 minutes. And if you don't eat every single thing on your plate, then they save the meal for you until you do eat it. If you had like chicken nuggets with ketchup or something and you finished all your chicken nuggets but still had a whole thing of ketchup, you had to eat the ketchup with a spoon out of the plate until it was done. So this girl had never had meat in her life and she didn't eat for 3 whole days because she wouldn't eat the meat. So they kept this meat in the fridge for 3 days until she was ready to actually get right and eat the food that's been given to her. And she was really sick and it was just like a whole thing. And so they did that quite regularly. They would use withholding food and condiments and withholding seconds, withholding things as forms of punishment. You know, you weren't allowed to have any other religion other than theirs. And if you talked about any other religion, you're disobeying and you're in trouble. If you spoke any other language other than English, you disobey and you're in trouble. We went to chapel about 3 times a day, and every single chapel, there was always some sermon about how we were all whores that are going to die in hell if we don't get saved and get right. And that's why we were all there. Hello, don't you see? Your parents sent you here because you're a whore, because of all the things that you're doing. So you are asking to be sent to a place like this through your actions, but it's okay because you can get saved. And that's kind of what most of the girls did the first week or two you're there. That's what I did. The first week I was there, I got resaved. There's a word for it, but I got saved again. Because the more that you do good in their eyes, the more they leave you alone and kind of don't punish you as much and just allow you to like skate underneath the radar. So that's kind of the approach that I took with it. Right? I'm going to keep my head down. I'm going to be a shining star and do the best that I can. And in a lot of ways, initially I did that, but then over time it became like, no, this is for real. If I don't walk this line, if I don't fall into this way of life, I really am going to die and burn in hell, or the rapture is going to happen and I'm going to be left behind on earth while all of the Christians who are saved go up to heaven. And we were taught that the more people that you save, the better, cushy, more experience you're going to get when you die and go to heaven. So they were constantly encouraging us to save as many souls as possible into this religion, because then you'll have mansions and cars and gold up in heaven. You're going to have all of that. And if you don't, you're going to be stuck on earth while we're all in heaven with these gold mansions.
Yeah. My mom remembers learning that in Mormonism. She said that for every good deed, I don't really remember learning this, but she said she remembers learning for every good deed, she would get a brick for her mansion in heaven. And so there were people who seemed to have good intentions and really wanted to help people know the truth or whatever, but in reality it was just very selfish of, well, I'm just building my mansion in heaven, and there was no real connection there. Which I wonder if any of that mentality had a role in you. They turn the victims into perpetrators, where they make you do the punishments to these other girls. And so did you in your mind think that you were saving them and helping them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought that I was, one, gaining brownie points with the staff, but also gaining brownie points with God. You know, like, I've been here for this long and I'm such a good girl and I'm such a good Christian and I'm bringing in all these other girls. And as soon as we get this girl saved, like once I became a buddier and helped the new girl get saved, it was like, oh good, I got another one. Yay. And I'm helping them with their future and with their life and all of that. So that's 100% relatable. The whole thing is super manipulative, and not just for me and what I experience and for the girls and what they experience, but to the parents too. Like, you know, my mom didn't realize what they were going to do when I was sent there. And oftentimes I did write letters and try to explain to my mom some of the things that were going on. And they would take out black permanent marker, completely cross off things that I had said, and would write in parentheses, like, this wasn't true what she wrote. This was misinformation. And my mom is trusting these people with my life and with my health and with my happiness, with everything, you know, with my growth. She's trusting these people and thinking that this is a good place because it's religion based and spiritual based. So this is good, but she never really actually knew the things that they were doing. You know, some of the stuff was just like so debilitating. Every Sunday night, they would bring the girls up for a Sunday roast. The girls who were bad, the worst that week, they would make you stand up in front of the entire school, and you'd have a long line of people, whether it was the staff members or helpers, and you would basically rattle off all the ways in which you were a bad Christian. And every Sunday, it'd always be this thing like, oh my gosh, please don't let me get roasted. Please don't let me get roasted. And they just do a long list of all the ways of why you're bad. And it was just one of those experiences where you just feel you felt so much shame and guilt. I was constantly feeling so much shame and guilt for just having normal human emotions. You know, like if you aren't walking down the hall singing a hymn or humming a hymn, then you didn't have the joy of the Lord in your heart and you weren't a good practicing Christian. You weren't doing the things that you needed to do to show that you were happy and that you were saved. Any emotion outside of the joy of the Lord was a negative emotion, not meant to be shared and not meant to be felt. So as you're a young teenager trying to work through some of these really heavy feelings, being separated from any access to your personal life and your comfort, I'm trying to juggle all these feelings that are coming up, and I have nobody that I can actually talk to about it. And cue in all the major rules of that's why we can't have razors there, no belts, because the amount of times women had tried to kill themselves there, it was a regular occurrence. So the rules started changing heavily after that happened regularly. The year before I got sent there, there was a death on the campus too, because literally any work on the property, any of the upkeep, whether it's yard work, moving limber, installing flooring, laundry, kitchen, like cooking, cleaning, literally everything we did on the property. They didn't want anybody from the outside coming in and having any idea of how things were run, or on the off chance that a girl does get to escape, which happened twice while I was there. But they don't want anyone knowing what's going on there. So yeah, the year before I was there, that's when they had their, I think it was their second death that occurred there. But basically they had these girls carrying huge pieces of lumber, like trunks of trees that they cut down, and the girls all had to carry it. And since, you know, you 14 and 15 year old girls carrying this huge tree, it fell on top of one of the girls and she fell into this hole she died. And stuff like that, where it's like, because you're so hell bent on us laboring for you and being put in these situations, that people are actually getting their lives threatened. It's so wild. But every single month we had a new duty that changed, and that was part of our duty as women too, to be a strong Christian woman, to learn how to take care of a household and learn how to do all of these practices, so that when we do get out of the school, we will find a nice Christian man who will marry us and we'll be able to take care of him because of all the things that we're learning right now at this school. How to be an obedient, obeying wife and mother.
Wow. And I'm sure they were teaching you things like sewing and cooking and all of the specific gender role things that they would want a woman to do.
Oh, yeah. When I first got sent there, the rules were you'd wear the bright yellow shirt with a skirt with nylons. You know, you can't show your legs, da-da-da-da. About 6 months into me being there, in the middle of the night, this is probably like one of my most memorable stories there, maybe. In the middle of the night, it was like 3 a.m., our dorm got woken up. So basically, there were six different dorms. One dorm had 16 bunk beds, another one had 14, another one had 8, and another one had 6. So you'd switch dorms like every couple months so that you could, I don't know why they had it, just because there was an inflow of rotation, people coming and going. So you'd switch dorms pretty regularly. But in the middle of the night, I woke up to the dorm lights coming on. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning. And there was like 7 new girls that came in that were on, like, had no idea where they came from. And usually when we get new people in, it's only like 1, maybe 2. But usually it's just like 1 at a time. So we had like 7 girls that came in the middle of the night. So what had happened was Michael Palmer, who was the person who started this institution, he had one in Baja, Mexico, and the conditions were significantly worse there than the ones at the school in Florida, which is
hard to imagine.
But I don't remember what legal team went in and shut that place down, but they shut it down and they were like, you can't be running this place anymore. Like, we had a get right room that was inside. They had like a cage.
What?
It's pretty wild. Rather than parents going, huh? The SWAT team or whatever team of people it was that came in there and legally shut this place down, rather than going, that's interesting, I wonder what was going on at that school, they go, well, let's send them to the location in Florida. So Michael Palmer convinced them, send them from Baja to the location in Florida. So we got all those girls, and that's when a bunch of the rules changed. So rather than wearing skirts, that we used to be able to express ourselves with skirts and things, we were now in jumpers, just like The Handmaid's Tale. So they looked just like that. They were dark red, dark blue, dark green. We had to wear certain colors on certain days of the week, and very, very plain. I think I already mentioned before, like no jewelry, no makeup, no nail painting, anything like that. It was a sin for women to wear pants that had a zipper on them. Everything's a sin. Once they put us in those clothing, that was like a deeper part of the identity stripping process, I guess, if you will. There was a girl that I knew there that she looked at herself too much in the mirror. So she was never allowed to look in the mirror. I don't remember how long it was, but maybe it was like 3 months at a time. She's not allowed to look in the mirror because she's vain. There was a girl that had to wear garden gloves for like 3 months because she picked her nails too much. So she had to wear garden gloves 24/7. The only time she could take them off was when she was washing her hands after the bathroom. Really ridiculous punishments like that were just like, totally just like messed with your head a little bit, made you feel guilty and shameful for
existing,
looking in the mirror or like biting your nail or something.
Yeah, that's so extreme. Was there anything like that that happened to you that you got punished for, something small?
I did get put on separation with somebody. So I was on yard work duty and I was raking, and me and this other girl, while no one, were how we thought, no one was listening, we talked about in private, like why we got sent away to the school. Like, what did you do? Why did your parents send you here? And da da da. And I had basically told her like what had happened, and she had told me what happened to her. And somebody told on us that we were talking, so we got put on separation. Basically, we have to pretend that the person died. So if she walks in the room, I have to turn around. I have to be always 6 feet or more away from her. I can't even be in the same room as her. But if we have to be for church or something, I have to make sure I'm not looking at her. I can't say her name. If someone says her name, I have to pretend that it doesn't exist. I can't react to anything having to do with them. I never ended up in the get right room. I did end up missing one Friday night because I had too many lines that I didn't finish. For the most part, I was a goody-goody and I sucked up a lot. I kissed ass a lot because I was just unwilling to spend a year of my life being completely miserable. And I knew that that was the best way to do it, which is pretty wild because I've had dreams where I go back and just like fuck shit up. It's pretty wild. I've also had dreams where I've gotten sent back and I just do it the exact same way. And then I wake up and have so much guilt and shame of just like, I literally had those thoughts all the time. Like, you were just like, you just took it. You just like rolled over and just took every little thing and didn't like stand up for yourself, and watching girls getting abused, didn't say or do anything. And like that, I carried a lot of guilt for that. Like just being like no backbone whatsoever. I just felt really guilty about being just kind of like a little goody two shoes that like let that stuff ride.
But you were in survival mode.
Total survival mode.
You were trying to survive. You were trying to have an okay time there. You were trying to just exist as a human. And so, of course, I mean, I probably would have done the same thing. I understand the guilt and it's valid and I totally get that. It's just, you know, I'm sure now you've done a lot of deconstructing and you realize that you were just doing the best that you could.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I've absolutely worked through a lot of that, but it was very real for a long time. And even too, just like being there too and watching it happen, you do see somebody getting physically abused and you do see girls getting floored and just like sketchy stuff that you know is going on, but it's not necessarily being talked about fully. Yeah. And just feeling kind of helpless and just knowing like, I want to help that person, but I also just need to take care of myself right now. And the way to do that is just like exist underneath the radar. The only time that I got in like serious trouble was the separation. And then I also got in trouble for, there was a male staff member who worked in, him and his wife both worked in the kitchen. And I somehow convinced him to let me make a phone call to my mom, which you're only allowed one phone call once a month or a visit once a month. So I didn't get like a ton of visits. So I did a lot of phone calls. And so one phone call for 30 minutes a month was what I got. And it wasn't enough for me. So I tried convincing this staff member to let me call my mom, and he took me into the office and I called my mom and I didn't get a hold of her. He ended up telling the staff that he did that for me because he felt so guilty. And then it got turned around that I was a bad girl and that I was using seduction in order to get him to allow me to make a phone call to my mom. And then I was the one that got in trouble for it because I was using my womanhood and I was being manipulative and doing the woman thing to get what I want from him, when really I think that there was a softness in this person's heart that was really like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, I'm going to let her do it. And I was just like crying. I was like, please, I really want to talk to my mom, you know, like whatever, whatever. And that was pretty much that was it for me. Like I didn't experience any of the physical abuse because I didn't allow it to go that way for me. I really stayed under the radar. When it comes to that type of stuff.
When your mom would visit, because they can't blackline what you're saying in real time, did you ever try and just blurt out what was going on there?
So no, my mom visited twice. The first time she visited, I was, so 3 months. After you're there for 3 months, if you're good, you can get a visit. By the time 3 months had happened, I was already fully in it. You know what I mean? Like I was in full, like, I'm supposed to be here. And I didn't even realize that a lot of the stuff that was going on was even wrong. A lot of it I didn't realize until honestly, like the last year or two, I forgot about this place for the longest time. I forgot about so much stuff that even went down. I had my mom send me all my letters from the school. She kept them all and she sent them to me about 3 years ago. And I wanted to reread them and kind of get acquainted with them again. And I had those letters sitting in my closet for like 3 years, thinking that everything that I experienced at the school and like what went down was not really that big of a deal, and forgetting a lot of the stuff that actually did happen. As soon as I opened up the letters and started reading them, it was like this overflowed of, oh my God, like I can't even, I forgot that certain things that had happened there and the way that it unplayed. And a lot of it too was just like, I'm a very emotional person, extremely emotional. And because of all of the things that I had experienced from my childhood, it was almost like a, for me, it was almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it verified, or it's like
validated.
It validated all of those insecurities that I was already feeling from childhood, right? Like I'm not worthy of love. I don't deserve love. I'm not good enough. Like even my own parents don't really want me. I'm a bad girl. Like I already have those feelings and thoughts. So going to that school, all those feelings, it validated every single one of those feelings. So it was like reinforced those feelings in such a deep way. So for me, like it took me so many years to shake out of that space where I went on like a 10-year journey of trying to fix me. And I was in and out of therapy for years and years and years, and thinking that there was just something really wrong with me. And it wasn't until this past year or two when I started deep diving into some different type of work where, and it's simple stuff, it's really simple stuff, but I had this programming in my brain of, you're a bad girl. All of the things you've experienced, you deserve, and you need to fix whatever's broken in you. When really that's just like, it's not the truth at all. The truth is it's totally normal and valid to have all of these feelings and experiences, and you just didn't know how to properly hold them and take care of them. And now you do.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. And I want to talk about your deconstruction process. First, I want to know, once you actually got out of that school and you came home, did your mom feel like, wow, she really is reformed and it worked? Or did she notice that you were beaten down in some psychological way?
Some of the little things that she absolutely noticed. For instance, like I would get a little bit of anxiety when it came to meal times because we had to eat every single thing on our plate. And my mom was an overcooker, being from a family of 1 to 10. So there was constantly like a bunch of food, and I would try and my damnedest to like eat all the food off my plate, because you don't want to waste anything, because if anything goes to waste, then you're not a good citizen. There's people dying in other countries. Like, you know, be grateful for the food God's giving you and eat it all. So I had to shake out some of that. And then just like being okay with normal conversation and vocabulary. It was looked down upon if you say anything like, yeah, or oh my goodness, like you always had to say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. You can't say any type of slang. Like you can't say the word butt, you have to say the word rump. And so it took me a little while to unshake from all of that. But the thing with me and my mom was, yes, when I first got back, I was on my best behavior and I was like so good because I was just in a reform school for troubled teens. So I was scared. But there was also that element of the root of the problem wasn't addressed by being thrown into a place with the Bible thrown at me and all these rules that really just broke me down and made me feel like a piece of shit. That wasn't going to fix the problem. The problem was I didn't know how to regulate my emotions. And I had such a deep, deep self-loathing. And I really just judged myself so hard. So what happened was, after some time, the same type of behaviors would start coming up and me and my mom would butt heads again. And we have a tumultuous relationship, and she would threaten to send me back to the school. And that was really like, for the two of us, like I went into therapy for the first few months after I got back. And it was actually my therapist who told me that I was a part of a cult. I didn't even realize that it was a cult. And she was like, you know, Ashley, this is a cult. The place you got sent to is a cult. That is cult-like behaviors. I went to see a therapist for a little while, but as I said, it wasn't until about a year ago when the survivor's prom was happening and me and you started talking about this podcast, where I wasn't even going to go to Survivor's prom. I was like, ugh. Basically Survivor's prom. This girl who's an advocate for the TTI industry, the troubled teen industry, she put on this prom basically for anybody that's been a part of the TTI school. Basically, you miss out on being able to go to prom or any of those kind of fun things that you get to do when you're in high school. And she put on this big event so that everyone could meet up and have an actual prom and everyone can share with each other and talk about their experiences and just connect over the same type of trauma that we experienced. And so I was like, I don't really want to go to a prom, but maybe this is important for me to show up to. So when you initially asked me, or when we initially talked about doing this podcast, I was like, yeah, yeah. And then I started reading the letters and then I was getting geared up to go to prom and I was like hearing about all of the other people's stories. And I'm just like, holy shit. I have actually never processed any of this stuff as an adult ever. I literally blocked out so much of like the little things that happened that added up that just like broke me down as a human being. And I was looking back and in hindsight, I'm like, so much of my microaggressions and so much of my anxiety and so much of my guilt and judgment of myself and others stems from that experience. And I had no idea. I mean, I'm talking about like so much misplaced anger with anybody close to me in my life, especially with female relationships too, because the staff there was all female for the most part. The ones that were, you know, you have the male pastors and things like that, but the staff were the ones that slept in the dorms and like they were in charge of like the interpersonal relationships. And so these female staff members who are supposed to be guiding you and protecting you were the very ones who were detrimental to your trauma. Like they were the ones that were handing it over to you. And so just like with close friendships and with authority and with any female type of relationship where I'm like, as soon as it starts to feel safe and it starts to feel like intimate, all of a sudden these walls are going up and I'm like, this is going to change or drop in any moment. And I don't know if I can trust you. And this is all subconscious. This isn't in the front of my mind where I'm like, I think this because of this. It's like after doing a lot of work and realizing, why am I having so much anger at this person? Why do I have so much anger towards this situation? Why do I have so much anxiety when this gets risen up? It's all stemmed from those experiences because it was so ingrained. So the programming was so hardcore. I'm talking about when you go to chapel 3 days a week and get told a specific thing and then get punished for not believing it. It gets pretty ingrained in your head pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so I dealt with a lot of just having to reprogram, like, I am worthy of love. I am okay. I am safe. And creating that safety within myself, that's been a huge part of just sifting through a lot of this. I didn't think for the longest time that I had any right to be angry at my mom because I'm like, she loves me. She was doing the best that she could. She really thought that she was helping me. And then it all came out. Like I did this, I did a session in therapy where I just wrote down all of the things, the people, institutions, and all the things that I have anger towards. And so much of it was towards my mom. And I didn't think at that time, like when I was 14 years old, I didn't think I had a right to be angry at her. She was just doing what she was supposed to be doing. And the truth is anger is a normal emotion to have. And in fact, anger is a helpful emotion to have. And for so long, I was taught that it was bad. And then I'm bad if I feel anger. When the truth is, anger is a helpful tool into showing you that your boundaries have been crossed. And without anger, you might not be able to realize that. And so dealing with a lot of that and self-love, honestly, like I just hated who I was for so long because I thought that I was so bad and just like a useless member of society and just like a useless person in general. So a lot of reprogramming in the way that I look at what I'm allowed to feel. And I just kind of measured my experience to like, you know, even just a lot of the people on your podcast, Jalees, like it was very like, I don't even know if I have a right to go talk about this experience because I didn't get raped or beat or paddled or something, you know, like does this even qualify? And it's like, it took me years to get to the place where it's like, yeah, actually everyone's trauma looks differently in every experience and you don't need to physically be abused to experience trauma and abuse.
Yes.
It's very real and I have every right to talk about that experience. And the more that I've talked about it, because I didn't talk about this boarding school experience, not to this level with anybody up until recently. It's very cathartic. It's very, it's like liberating. It feels like I do have a right I do have a right to exist, and I do have a right to share about my experience. And it feels really good to do that, to be seen and to be told, like, you're not alone, and what you experienced was not okay.
Right.
It was very much not okay.
Yeah. There's so much there. And just, wow, all of the insights you've just provided are just amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people who can really resonate and relate with your story. And the first thing that I want to say about the mom thing is, it just shows how much empathy and compassion that you have for other people, that even when you are getting beat down psychologically and you come home and you have all of these experiences and these bottled up feelings, you are still able to not necessarily blame your mom or see her in her best light. Because as far as what you've told us, it does sound like she had the best of intentions for you. She just wanted you to not go down the same path that she did, and she didn't realize everything that was going on. And yes, in that way, we don't want to put all of the blame on her, but it's okay at the same time to say, yes, and I'm angry that you did that, or yes, you had the best intentions, but I'm angry that you didn't go to the school yourself beforehand and really vet it and make sure that it was a safe place for me. There's room to hold both of those opinions at the same time. And so I think it's really important to allow yourself to do that. And then the other thing, you were talking about the trauma comparison. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I've done it. I mean, when I look at my childhood in Mormonism, I'm like, mine was a cakewalk compared to these other people who I interview. And what I always have to remind myself too is that we can never compare our traumas, because just because something wasn't seen as bad as someone else had it, it doesn't mean it wasn't hugely effective in our life. So yes, I had all of this purity culture stuff, and it was incredibly traumatic for me. Once I've unwound it, it's taken years to figure out why I am the way that I am. And then I realize, oh, it's because of Mormonism. But that doesn't mean that I can't hold space for myself and be like, yes, that was traumatic. And what you experienced was very traumatic as well, because trauma is all relative. And I mean, I'm kind of rambling, but I hope that makes sense, that it doesn't matter what someone else has gone through. Your experience is just as valid to give love to and unwind and work through and process than somebody else's.
1,000%. Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad that you said that as well, because it took me a while to get to that point and stop doing the comparing my trauma with their trauma. And it is so personal, and everyone's experience is different. And yeah, I'm happy to be in this place now where I can acknowledge and hold space for what I experienced. And I think there was also just like this element for the longest time of not wanting to be a victim, right? And not wanting to be like, this thing happened to me and I'm just going to announce it to the world and talk about it because I'm a victim and boohoo. And I think me, since I was trying so hard not to be that, I just didn't even acknowledge any of the things that I was experiencing as a result from it. So I kind of went in the other direction. So I'm grateful to be in this position where I am today, where I'm actually able to hold space for the things I experienced and reprogram.
Yeah, that's something that people say too sometimes that really irks me in the comments about the victim thing, where they're like, oh, geez, here's someone else just trying to be a victim. And it's so invalidating, because yes, you can obviously overcorrect and go in a direction of like, poor me, the world's out to get me, and this happened and this happened. But that's not everybody's case. Sometimes people just want to be heard, and they're not trying to get sympathy. They just want someone to say, thank you for sharing that with me. They just want someone to hear them, because sometimes all it takes is getting it out and bringing it into the open and saying those words to feel somewhat better. And so when people say, well, just don't be a victim, that's also this toxic positivity of, don't talk about it. Well, can you just shut up about it already? It's like, that's not how it works with trauma. It doesn't just go away, especially if you haven't acknowledged it yourself, if you haven't made a point to try and talk about it to somebody, whether it's a friend, a therapist, a parent, whoever. And so when people say stop being a victim, it really bothers me. And I hope that bringing it out now, people can have a better understanding and have more compassion for those who really just want to be heard. That's really the bottom line. Be there for someone if they're hurting and they want to be heard, they want to be seen, they want to be validated. You don't have to fix them. That's not your job. And they aren't broken in the first place. Let's just put that out there. There is no fixing. It's about finding inner peace and happiness and joy and releasing guilt and the deprogramming. So I guess my point with this whole thing is if someone is sharing something deeply traumatic, even if you don't know the person, if it's online and you're one of these people watching and your first thought is you want to say in the comments, stop being a victim, really just take a minute and think about everything from their perspective. Think about holding more compassion and just being able to recognize someone for their experience and let them do whatever they need to do with that.
I'm so glad that you said that too, because I think it allows the space for other people to have their experience and to exist without doing the victim shaming. It's so important. And so important for people, like you said, just to be seen and just to be heard. Shit, if I would have acknowledged all of this stuff many, many years ago, my healing journey would have looked very different. I would have released the shame of, am I being a victim? You know, and just like had the opportunity to share from a place of just real authenticity and not have the imposter syndrome hanging over. And I'm so grateful that we live in the space where we are today, where it is okay. Two things can be true at the same time. We can talk about our experience and know that we've been victimized and still not be a victim and let that be our whole identity. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I know that I was victimized, but I don't wear that as a badge and go around, but I absolutely acknowledge it and it deserves to be acknowledged. And I'm not going to stop acknowledging it.
Yeah.
It's important. It's important work.
It's also a form of empowerment, because when you can recognize part of your past and say, even if it's in casual conversation, yeah, I went a little crazy and I did X, Y, or Z. And I realize now that that's probably because the way I was raised, and that was a mentality that I had to deprogram. I think there's so much power in being able to verbalize something in that way. And it's not saying, well, the only reason that I did X, Y, or Z is because I was such a victim in my past and da, 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 da. Like, you can still recognize something in an empowered state and not be the whole, not have that victim mentality that I think people are talking about of feel sorry for me. It's just, it's a way of understanding who we are as people by being able to do the work and acknowledge the things that made us the way that we were, even if it's something we're not totally over yet. It may be something you're still working on, and you can still actively be empowered instead of victimized if you're still working through something through the mentality in which you present yourself. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. That's where I'm at right now. That's exactly where I'm at right now. And it is empowering.
Yeah. So if you are willing to share, what are some of the things that you are currently working through and finding peace with?
So some of the things that, especially over this past year, the main things that I'm focusing on is just meeting myself with softness, because I have been so hard on trying to fix myself all throughout these years. And I'm so appreciative of the fact that you said that there's nothing to be fixed. We're not broken. We're not like, you know, bad people that need to repair. You know, it's just a reprogramming and just meeting myself with softness, because I used to be so hard on myself to be better, to show up better. And I would have nervous system dysregulation responses and not understanding that it all came down to regulating my nervous system and what that looked like. And so today, part of my healing process is learning how to create safety within my own body, so that no matter what happens around me, I'm okay, no matter what. You know, my mom can do something that could trigger me, that could bring up old stuff, and it doesn't matter. I don't need to respond to that in a certain way, because I know that I'm safe no matter what. And the same thing with, you know, these microaggressions that will come up when I get triggered by somebody, whether it's somebody in authority or somebody who's said something that was very offensive that didn't mean it that way, but I took it that way. Those are just like little examples. But when I have a reaction that isn't ideal, instead of beating myself up for it and going, oh my gosh, you just got angrier. Oh my gosh, you have so much anxiety. Why are you so anxious? I would always be these questions to myself. Like, why can't you just stop being so anxious? Why are you so in your head? Why? Now, when those moments come up, instead of judging myself for it, I'm just like leading with peace and love in my heart and going, it's okay that you have this normal emotion called anxiety, or that you have a normal reaction of anger. Like, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with you. You are completely okay to feel that. And let's like focus on living in your body and realizing these sensations that are happening in your body. Focus on that instead of this story that we can tag on to it that can get me to loop and loop and loop, which is basically what I did for an entire year at that place, was just looping in my mind and creating these not such great belief thought patterns. And so today that just looks like me meeting myself with softness and grace and not judging myself and not trying to be so perfect, because there isn't a heaven that I need to get to, and I don't need to save souls to get there, and I don't need to be perfect, and I don't need to always be singing to be a good person. I don't need to always be talking about God to be a good person. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to constantly make sure that I'm good to be good. I am good, you know, like I'm good. I was born good. I'm good. And nobody can take that away from me based on a religious belief. Like, I am inherently, you know, a human being that's like got kindness and love, and that's all, you know, I don't need to change anything about myself to be worthy of love. And a lot of the work that I'm doing today is just revolved around that, meeting myself with softness and grace and just like forgiveness too. I have so much forgiveness in my heart for myself. You know, because it was me for the longest time. It was me who had so much guilt and shame against myself. And so today that just looks very different. It's just, I'm not judging myself anymore. And I don't have anger towards myself for not being perfect.
Wow. That's amazing. Just amen, hands to the sky for everything you just said. That was so beautifully spoken. Where do we even go from here? How are you doing then? I mean, clearly you've been doing a lot of work and introspection, and you've mentioned therapy, and you're just doing what's best for you and figuring all of that out. So what, aside from all of that, brings you peace and happiness and joy?
Being outside in nature. Honestly, being outside in nature is completely nourishing for me. Breathing in the trees, interacting with feeding the squirrels at the park near my house, watching the sunset, just like simple pleasures of this earth, connecting with other women, doing full moon ceremonies. I love doing that. I love everything to do with the moon and the stars. I love everything to do with nature. I love being outside. I love just being able to experience the world through my human experience. You know, like, I strongly believe that we are all spiritual beings having this human experience. You know, we're just like walking around in these meat suits trying to figure life out. And right now, like, it brings me so much joy and happiness to, one, be vulnerable and connect with other human beings constantly. I'm just like, I'm always walking around with my heart open, just wanting to connect with others in any way, shape, or form. So the moment somebody wants to step into this and connect with me, I'm so happy. And then just being outside. I love being outside. I love being in nature. I'm so happy where I live right now in Florida. I get to walk and watch the sunset any day that I want. Just leave my house and walk 5 minutes down the road, and I'm seeing this beautiful sunset on the bay and feeding the squirrels nuts. Aww. I got them crawling up my arms and legs. Gosh. And feeding them nuts, you know. I'm like, all of this simple pleasures in life bring me so much joy and happiness. So definitely connecting with this world and connecting with other human beings and just giving and receiving love. Those all just nourish the fuck out of my soul.
I'm here for it. That's amazing. I love that so much. I think the simple pleasures are things that people often forget about. Just sitting in the grass or watching the sunset, like you said, something that allows you to just be present with yourself and just be. there's just so often we get stuck in this hamster wheel, and it happens to me all the time, especially with this channel, where I'm like, I gotta go, instead of just being. It's such a beautiful thing to just relax for a minute and just appreciate the simple things, appreciate the beauty around us and the world and the people around us. So thank you so much for sharing that. Oh my gosh. Okay, we need to do the Linda Listen moment, a sassy statement as the viral video with the toddler goes, or something inspirational. You've given so much inspiration, but it's up to you.
I think it would be Linda, listen. You're actually doing all right. You don't need to change anything about yourself to make yourself better to belong. And you absolutely, if you have been sent to a TTI school or have been part of any type of denominational or organized religion or cult, you're doing okay. You're doing just fine. And meet yourself with love and grace, because you need to become your own best friend. And that's the way to do it, is to constantly come back to meet yourself with love and grace and hold yourself on such a deep level. The truth, the only way to it is to go through it. So allow yourself to feel every aspect of your emotions. None of them are bad, and none of them, you know, need to be any different other than what they are. And they're just asking for you to hold them.
Yes, I love it. So good. Thank you so much, Ashley, for coming on and sharing. I know we've been talking about this for months and months and months. Wasn't it last summer, yeah, something that you first reached out?
Yeah, like a year almost.
Yeah. And I feel like now was the perfect time, though, because you did have time to go to that survivor's prom and read some of those letters. And I feel like it was the perfect timing to eventually just come out and talk about everything.
I am so grateful for this podcast, because I didn't even realize how much more healing was needing to be done. If it wasn't for this podcast, I wouldn't have revisited my experience in such a deep way.
Oh, wow.
And it all happened at the same time. It was like the podcast and then the survivor's prom, or maybe it was survivor's prom, then the podcast. I don't know, but everything, it was like, oh my God, this is too much. I can't handle it. And then life happened and it was like, okay, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Yeah, I just got
goosebumps. I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much for allowing me the space to connect with you about this, and to continue connecting with myself about it too. It's been really awesome to be able to get to know myself more and just be in right relationship with myself.
Yeah.
And just become my own best friend again. That's been really amazing.
Oh my gosh, how cool is that? Because without you, this podcast wouldn't exist. What? Mind blown.
What? Podcast inception.
Yeah, exactly. Which came first? I don't know. That's so cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing. I'm sure it's going to reach a lot of people. And so I'm just really excited to know more of your story and connect with you again, because we haven't seen each other in person in a long time. So
I know.
Yeah, it's so awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to share? Any final thoughts before we go?
No, I think that's it. I mean, there is literally, we could talk forever about it, but you know, I'm a little nervous. So
I think you did such a great job.
Thank you so much. I think we pretty much covered a lot of it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to continuing to check in here.
Yeah. So guys, if you want to reach out to Ashley, you can go to her Instagram at Ashfilet. I'll put the links in the description below, or her Facebook link as well. And just leaving those words of encouragement means so much to our guests and to us, of course. If you want to support the podcast even further, you can do so by getting some merch. We have some funny, silly t-shirts over there, like I'm sorry for what I said when I was in a cult, apostates unite, break the silence, break the cycle, good stuff. So you can check that out at cultstoconsciousness.com under the merch tab. But you can become a patron if you'd like at patreon.com/cultstoconsciousness. We're working on channel memberships, because I know some of you have been asking for that instead of Patreon. So we're working on getting those out to you. If you want to come to Costa Rica for a non-culty experience, we're going to do some fun stuff. There's 5 spots left as of the recording of this video, and that's in the description as well.
Thanks for listening.
And I will leave
if you like what you hear, it would mean a lot if you could like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review or a comment to help with our visibility. You can also find me on social media at cults2consciousness, or reach out by email at cults2consciousness@gmail.com.
What? That is, you would go insane.
A lot of people did. A lot of people did go insane. And one of the saddest things about it is it was so psychologically abusive that when girls would have reactions to this type of psychological abuse and emotional and mental abuse, instead of giving them the proper tools on how to regulate their nervous system and work through big emotional reactions, it was like, you're bad, you're wrong, your feelings are bad and wrong, and you're just a sinner that needs to get right with God. And that's why you're having so many issues right now.
Wow.
It's because you're not right with God. The year before I got sent there, there was a death on the campus too, because literally any work on the property, any of the upkeep, whether it's yard work, moving limber, installing flooring, laundry, kitchen, like cooking, cleaning. But basically, they had these girls carrying huge pieces of lumber, like trunks of trees that they cut down, and the girls all had to carry it. And since, you know, you 14 and 15 year old girls carrying this huge tree, it fell on top of one of the girls and she fell into this hole she died. Rather than wearing skirts that we used to be able to express ourselves with skirts and things, we were now in jumpers, just like The Handmaid's Tale. So they looked just like that. They were dark red, dark blue, dark green. We had to wear certain colors on certain days of the week.